From the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok. Our commentary today is for the 1952 classic, Singin' in the Rain. My name is Serge Dolpierre, and your name, sir, is?
Tim McMillan.
And your name, ma'am, is?
Laura Thompson.
And your name, sir, is?
Duncan K. Fraser.
Awesome. Our cue point for Singin' in the Rain is, okay, this, well, it's tricky as usual. It's the very beginning of the MGM logo. Now, mind you, this is the old MGM logo, not the new MGM logo. That's with the old Leo because they did change it at some point. So anyway, at the very beginning, right as it's just about to start fading up, that's where you pause it, and we're going to talk for a little bit while you do that. And then when we're ready to go, I'll count down 3, 2, 1, play, and then you'll hit play, and then we'll be watching this and we'll be talking. You'll get to listen to us, or you can listen to us when you're doing something else like washing dishes or going running or whatever you do. Anyway, so I'm going to look at you, Tim, about Singin' in the Rain. You are a resident expert. Well, at least one of our resident experts here on Singin' in the Rain.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen this film, sir?
Have I ever seen this film? Yes, I'm a resident expert on the film I haven't seen. So I'm looking forward to catching it for the first time today.
Awesome, awesome. Do you have any nice little information or tidbit or like first times or anything like that for us?
Well, actually, I don't, as far as trying to recall the first time I saw this. It seems to me that it's always been part of my consciousness. I can't remember not ever having seen this. Let's put it that way. So as long as I've been living, I feel like I've seen Singin' in the Rain.
So it's like you basically learned it in utero.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I kind of have the feeling, too. I don't know. It's like I was born knowing Singin' in the Rain.
It's just, yeah, it's a DNA thing. I don't know. It's just imprinted.
It's in the imprinted in the American psyche, even though I am not American by birth. So somehow it did translate. So.
Hmm.
Well, very interesting phenomena.
It's just the musical, I think, as far as represents classic Hollywood.
I think it's the greatest musical ever made.
A lot of people do. Mm-hmm. Francois Truffaut.
Oh, really?
He believed this was the greatest musical ever made.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So as far as, yeah, the French and everything, and absolutely love this film.
Oh, of course they do.
So,
yes. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's always a good thing when the French like
sorry,
something.
Excuse me.
Duncan K. Fraser. Jeez.
Wasn't sure.
And I know you have some interesting stories which you'll sprinkle throughout the whole commentary.
Yes,
about this.
If I sprinkle too much, just pull me back. Just let me know.
And I wasn't trying to, that was no pun intended there on the use of it. Never
you
mind.
Should claim okay. That it was a good one.
Oh, no, I'm just going to keep on going. Okay, Laura.
If I'm sprinkling too much while it's raining in the movie, Singin' in the Rain.
Miss Thompson?
Yay.
Yes, Singin' in the Rain.
Well, I would be the same as this gentleman here and probably everyone here in that I've seen it since I was a child, been seeing it since I was a child, and I can't remember a time I haven't seen this movie. And I know that my parents would always build it up as like one of the greatest movies of all time, and one of the greatest musicals of all time. And I have to say that after all these years and all the movies I've seen, I would agree. It really is one of the greatest movies of all time. It's just very tightly made, sort of perfectly made. I don't know how you can improve upon this movie. Mm. It was just a perfect satire of the transition from the silent movies to the talkies.
Yeah.
And of course, in addition to that, it just boasts some of the greatest dance numbers on film of all time. You know, great songs that people still sing, and great performances. And it's just a lot of great fun. I don't know what else to say, but great.
You know, you just made me think of something, is that I've always, back when I was in my younger days, I always liked meta movies and other movies about films being made. And then as I got a little older, I was like, you know what, these films never work, because the whole problem is it's what I call the Wizard of Oz effect, is that essentially you're pulling the curtain back on how movies are made, and people may like it, but unconsciously they're like, I don't want to know how a movie is made. I want to go and I want to, you know, I don't want to know the magic trick.
Right.
That said, somehow this movie pulls it off. And I think it pulls it off because of the time it was made and also the magic they incorporated into it in terms of making it. So
this film is the exception to your rule as far as a film that really works, that is based on how movies are made, what you just said. Also, as far as, I can't think of a musical that's more fun than this movie.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Its tongue is firmly planted in cheek, and it is just fun.
But it's not dumb fun necessarily. Not dumb fun. It's actually smart fun.
It has farce. It has, you know, as far as they're sending up the from silent to talkies and the industry and the producers and the sound technicians and this or that. But everyone, even if it was so hard and a difficult film to make, which it was for the people that were doing this, the actors, right. They come off euphoric. And it's just a wonderful pitch of energy through the entire film. And for me, it's one of the most energetic, wonderful up films that happens to be a musical. It's just great.
And maybe that's what does. Maybe that's what helped carries it over. One of those things. But we'll take a look and we'll see. And yeah, I'm looking at you, Duncan. You've been very quiet.
Well, I'm letting the experts speak.
Oh. I'm not an expert.
It's not really wise to talk over
Duncan.
Those who know what they're talking
Duncan,
about.
Duncan, we're all experts here.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
You've seen this, what, on TV?
On a television set. I don't think I've seen it in a movie venue before, per se.
Actually, here's a good question. Has anyone here seen it in a movie venue?
Yes.
Unfortunately, no.
I have not. Yeah, wow.
This is one of the films that are designed for an audience. You have to get the live, full audience reaction. It's incredible. It's so fun.
Where did you see it?
In Phoenix, in a re-release in the theater.
Like kind of recently?
No, a long, long time ago. That would have been 15 years ago.
Well, it's not that long.
It's kind of like my thing with Casablanca. I mean, up until I saw Casablanca in front of a live audience, I was like, wow, Casablanca. And I was like, oh, this is an awesome film when you see it with an audience. I've had the conversation with you, Duncan.
Yes. Yeah. The audience effect and all that. I mean, yeah. I mean, we could get into the whole thing about what medium a film is made for, you know, and pretty much any film that's made to be released is better in a theater for one reason or another.
And this film, certainly, because it's like, I mean, it plays like a show. It plays like a musical, and musicals are meant to be seen with a big audience in a big on a big screen or in a big stage. So that's why it works better with a big audience.
You mean I can't watch this on my iPhone and really truly enjoy it?
No.
Yes, you can, but it'll be in a different, you know, parameter of the enjoyment, I think.
So what we're suggesting here is that people actually, if they have a chance to do this, to actually go to the movie theater and see this film,
yes,
much less any other film.
If you get a decent print and the Technicolor in this film, it will knock you out of your chair.
And here's what you can do. Okay, so you take this podcast of Singing in the Rain, okay? So you take your iPod and you go to the theater and you secretly put your little headphones on and then you watch the movie and you're listening to us while you're watching the movie. How about that?
Hey.
Ooh.
The perfect scenario.
This could be a trend.
I'm telling you.
I don't know. Okay, on that note, so now you're sitting in the movie theater, okay, and we're going to get ready and then you'll start it when the movie starts. You don't have to, like, sync it up for yourself, okay? All right, yeah, because you are going to do this. All right, so I'm going to count down now. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, play.
Oh, yeah.
There's Leo, old Leo. I liked old Leo.
Is that your slang for lion, or is that the name?
No, that's
of the lion?
The name. There's two Leo the Lion logos. They changed it, I think, sometime in the late 50s, early 60s.
Hmm. Now, I believe they're on conveyor belts here. No. No, they're in place. Are they walking in place there?
No, yeah. They've got to be on a conveyor belt.
Are they?
That's like Bye Bye Birdie at the beginning, only we don't see your feet in Bye Bye Birdie.
Well, it's possible that the camera's on a pulley and they're just pulling it back.
No,
it's a static shot.
It's a static shot because the whole background is lit evenly. Mm-hmm.
So. And I thought it was interesting that the camera tilts down on those three as we go into the titles. There's Rita Moreno. People understand that she has a part in this.
It's like Gene Hagen. Actually, this film was nominated for 2 Oscars. One of them was for Gene Hagen for Best Supporting Actress.
And she was amazing in this.
This
she
is
really
her
was.
Finest hour.
And Lenny Hayden, music direction. Lenny Hayden was nominated also for music direction. He did not win.
Oh.
I don't know who did, but he did not win.
Beautiful Technicolor photography.
Yay, Technicolor. 3-strip.
Now, you know, this is the partnership of Stanley Donen and Gene Kelly. They both were partners in this film as far as directing and choreography.
Oh, is this where it started?
No, that actually, where did that start? I don't know if it started in Take Me Out to the Ball Game or On the Town, but they were definitely at the height of their partnership at this stage this film.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Arthur Freed.
It's odd to see two directors on a film and
it
here.
I'd forgotten he was in the credits, too. That's right.
Wow, that place has been around forever, huh?
Yeah. Well, I think the top part of that's a Mad painting.
And, Serge, you didn't recall that Madge Blake was in this film. Well, here's your scene. Right there she is.
Aunt Marion? Is that what it is?
That's right, Batman.
From Batman.
Huh. Oh, my darn.
Who had no idea that Bruce Wayne was Batman. None. Oh, I guess that's who it is. Wow.
Well, I think what's great about this is that this is around the time that celebrities really became celebrities, or I should say actors really became celebrities because of all these gossip magazines and, you know, all the celebrity magazines and red mm-hmm. carpet thing. Like, it wasn't as big a deal in, you know, the beginning of film, like 1900s, maybe 19-teens, but I think the 1920s is when it really became a business to turn these people into celebrities.
They were American royalty. They were
absolutely.
Yeah, and I think, well, definitely by then, and, I mean, you had Valentino and everything. Oh, that's a great dress.
And look at the look the woman in the black shoots over left shoulder.
Yeah.
Who?
and actually just writing. Hi, Donald O'Connor. But it's a great way to introduce everyone also.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, in the context of this, now we look at it, you know, one thing that drives me crazy is when, you know, the ellipses that are used with scripts these days where it's like, oh, it's the TV report and we tell you what's happening. I hate that.
Right.
But here somehow, I mean, it works within the context because this was all about the frenzy. Donald O'Connor is so young.
Yeah, I truly believe this is Jean Hagen's finest hour.
Yeah, she really was stellar.
She took
in this
part and just soared.
And, you know, it's actually not that easy to play a bimbo and play it like with perfect comic timing. Because you can be stupid, but so stupid that you miss the comic beats. But she just nails it every time.
When I think of the best dumb blondes on film, I think Jean Hagen. I think, not truly dumb blonde, but Judy Holliday.
Yeah. Born Yesterday, who won an Oscar for that.
Leslie Ann Warren in Victor Victoria. But she's awesome.
Was she nominated for that too?
I believe she was.
Is there a whole thing about nominating women who play bimbos?
Well, Mira Sorvino played a bimbo and won an Oscar.
Mighty Aphrodite. Yeah. Oh, actually, you know what? If we carry this through, Marissa Tomei in My Cousin Vinny. She played the bimbo with smarts.
Yep.
So basically, that's the key to winning your Best Supporting Actress award, which will then, of course, guarantee you that you will not work again, is play the bimbo and you'll get your Oscar.
But here we have Jean Hagen, who's a bimbo who doesn't have any brains. Her character.
Well, she has some conniving.
Well, she has. Yeah, she has evil in her. That's true. She can be very smart in how she deceives people.
Yeah, in her conniving way, but ultimately she's not smart enough to prevent her own demise.
That's true, her own downfall, no less.
But which is the interesting meta story under here is that there's a whole change in the industry about who could survive and not. I mean, there was a serious thing about this.
Right.
And also the move from vaudeville, you know, essentially how vaudeville was dying and how the media was changing.
And this sequence is truly fabulous in the way that it shows the progression of how they made it up through burlesque and vaudeville and
with dignity,
whatnot.
Always dignity.
That's right. But this is the way showbiz was.
Absolutely. Know? And I think it gives a really good representation of vaudeville and all of that. And it is kind of amazing how they do these amazing dance numbers.
I like how they're sneaking in.
and yet they're still booed. Like fit as a fiddle, and they're still booed.
Yeah.
Because you could be amazingly talented back then, but if the audience wasn't feeling it, you were dead.
Oh, yeah. It's a great entertaining way to show us their backstory, the two characters here.
Yeah, I mean, we're like 5 minutes in, and we're getting the whole
everything.
Backstory in a great montage sequence. It's very entertaining.
Always dignity.
Yeah. Dead Man's Fang. I like that.
And this just has to be one of the greatest, like, buddy dance numbers ever, I think.
Nice choreography in this.
Yeah, the choreography makes it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Gene Kelly, icon, him and Fred Astaire, icons of dance on film.
Move.
But look at, people don't really realize, Donald O'Connor, watch him in this movie. Donald O'Connor is a wonderful dancer.
He really
was. You know, of course, what is it? Is it Make Him Laugh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Make Him Laugh. Basically all the his flips that he did.
But see, now apparently he didn't think of himself as a dancer because he had a really hard time learning the dance moves.
Really?
Like, he had to have a special coach to study, and he worked really, really hard on his own to learn the dance moves.
Look at that. I mean,
but
he could definitely move.
Oh, but he's amazing once he got it.
You know, there's two different classifications. There's a hoofer and there's a dancer. Was Donald O'Connor more of a hoofer, would you say, then?
I'm a hoofer.
But all I can say is, when you watch, he is holding his own and then some against Gene Kelly this entire film.
Oh, and this, the
Moses
whole...
supposes, they're, it's amazing if you watch, which we will, the number coming up, they are astounding, and Donald O'Connor is right there every second.
Oh, look, I mean, they're right all together. I mean, there's no slanking there. That's amazing.
Well, people clearly, even if he is technically a hoofer, he's very, very talented and skilled. You put enough, you know, of your mind and work into anything,
what he shows.
He's got the tools.
But I think he was cast well, too. He was able to move, and that's part of why he was cast.
Sure.
And they get booed. What? No.
Hold those smiles, guys. Oops, excuse me.
No, was that?
That's okay. That was Tim.
Was that supposed to show how vaudeville's kind of going out? That scene?
No, that vaudeville was tough.
Or why would they boo them? Oh, just that it was tough.
It's tough. Well, no, they were good. It just was tough.
Well, they weren't going over. They weren't clicking with their audiences.
Yeah. Mm.
Right.
And here's some stunt work.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, Duncan, there's stunt work.
Hey, look at that.
Ooh.
No, they look like crap.
Once again, now we get into the whole thing about movies about movies.
You didn't get hurt enough. Do it again.
Right? He actually fell.
He's knocked out. The guy made contact.
No, he's crying. Oh, he's breathing?
Well, he's knocked out. He's not dead.
Oh, he's knocked out? Oh, he was just breathing.
Well, if anything knocked him out, it was falling against the bar because they definitely didn't make contact. Timing was way up.
Well, you know, the fight choreography in a musical may not be up to par with fight choreography in a fight film.
Well, fair enough. I don't know what the joke is, though. Like, is the joke that he didn't really hit him and he still knocked himself out, which I think is pretty funny, or that he actually hit him and knocked him out?
I think
which
he
is a
actually
different joke,
hit
right?
him.
The joke is
think?
That he made contact with the man and hit him. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think back then they were far looser about safety.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And even nowadays...
Okay, that was
even
a,
if it's
you do know that they did switch the two guys.
Yeah,
right there.
Yeah.
That was good.
And even nowadays, even if they want to make something look more real, if something's a little too close up, they'll just agree ahead of time. I'm really going to hit you on this part.
Right, and I think that's what the sequence is showing is just how much the stunt guys took a beating back then.
Well, they still take a beating, but
what all the crap he did to try to make it right.
But also
just insane.
But that's because also
somebody really did that too.
Yeah, somebody did.
It's because back then, I mean, the whole thing is it was all visual. It was a visual medium.
But here's a jump cut, and then it explodes.
Oh yeah,
but
that was a great jump cut.
It was a good jump cut.
Like, yeah, it was.
It was very good.
But that's the whole thing is that why they did so. You know why that it was. All these stunts were done is because it was all visual. I mean, there was, all you had was music. There was no dialogue to carry anything. And so that's why you had a lot more physical work going on here.
That makes sense. That's an interesting chair apparatus.
Slant board.
Yes, because she was most likely sewn into her costume. So she could not sit down. It's the whole thing with Jean Harlow. I don't know if you've heard of this, but she was literally sewn into her costume. So they had a board that she would lean against. That's how she, quote, sat down.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding you.
That makes me think of like mummies and regenerated, you know, people from the dead or something. It's like, I have to sit in the chair for a moment. I'm feeling a little flushed.
And then, of course, now that he's a star, she's interested.
Of course.
Ladies, kick him.
Oh. And I love the fact that you actually don't hear her speak until it's comically appropriate.
That's a good point. Absolutely. Works really well in the film. Right. You'll see the scar on his left cheek.
Yeah, I noticed that.
He got that, I think he was riding his bike as a young kid, and he fell off and his face went into a pipe or something that was on the edge of the street.
Ow.
It's a really, really bad accident.
You know, whenever I see him, I say, look at that scar.
I noticed the scar because otherwise his whole face is very symmetrical, like the very, you know, epitome of like looks for Hollywood and everything. But then he's got the scar, which I think gives him
his face
character.
Is perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's just you notice it.
Yeah.
And this, of course, is a good satire of the silent films and the overacting, which was necessary because you couldn't hear them speak.
Right. It had more melodramatic flavor to it.
Absolutely. And it was fitting with the style of the 19th century stage as well.
But not always. I mean, if you look at silent films, actually, as it moved into the 20s, they did start getting into more realistic. I mean, not realistic like that we know in the 50s and 60s.
Right.
But definitely it was realer than the bigger stuff. You look at some of the work by the German Expressionists work.
Well, the Europeans, absolutely. Definitely. But I think it's the Americans that it was more over the top because they were just concerned about it being more purely entertaining.
Whereas, yes.
Whereas you take, I can't remember who did it, but they recently discovered Joan of Arc. It was a film made in the 1920s, and it was just stunning for its realism, even though it was a silent film.
Yeah, it's like the director's name is on the tip of my tongue, and I can't think of it. Yeah.
That fight sequence was actually not bad.
Oh. Hey.
Especially, he did the little, I forget the term for it, but basically the little martial arts flip-up thing where you're on your back and you like kick into a standing position. He actually did that at the very end.
Nice.
There.
Ooh, nice.
Yes.
Don't let her
and
speak.
By the way,
don't let her speak.
Didn't he look like the guy that played Inigo Montoya in Princess Bride, right? Oh. In the closet, though, with the makeup on?
Mandy Patinkin?
There you go. But as Inigo Montoya.
Right.
Lena's getting ticked off.
Uh-oh. And see, of course, this was a big problem, apparently, when they went to talkies, is some of the stars were really bad at talking.
Yeah.
They
had
bad voices that people didn't like.
Right. Yeah. And same before that, the transition. Nice. Nice. The transition
like
from radio into film also was like that because some people, I mean, it's like the joke now, you know, someone's really bad looking, you say, oh, they got a great face for radio.
Right.
No, but this film sort of dovetails into Sunset Boulevard as far as the
definitely
people that are phased out due to talkies.
You know, that's right.
Yeah.
She could be Norma Desmond. Doubtful. She's her neighbor.
A wacky cul-de-sac with Norma and Lena living on the same block.
Piano player. And I love that they had that with Donald O'Connor's character that, you know, his friend made it, but he didn't quite make it. But he's still able to stick around as the piano player. And even though he's equally talented to Gene Kelly, he still didn't make it. And that thing happens all the time,
yep,
even today.
Yep, that happens all the time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
You can have all the skills and all that. It's just all about timing if you're not...
Well, it's about
timing,
right, it's
your
about
look,
and,
you know.
And, right, like your look has to match with something that's happening right then. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Now the real impetus for this film being made was Arthur Freed, the producer. He was a very accomplished songwriter, and he wrote for MGM and a lot of musicals for many years. So he had a catalog of material, and he said, "I want to make a movie that revolves around the catalog of my material." So every song in this film is an Arthur Freed song that was written in the past. Uh-huh. Had nothing to do with this film. They just knitted it all together around the story that Comden and Green, the two that wrote this movie, wrote in order to incorporate all these songs written by Arthur Freed.
Interesting. That makes sense.
And they chose the theme of going from silent films to talkies.
Right.
To use this in.
Which was actually really kind of brilliant.
People
and also,
don't realize.
And they could, I mean, they totally could riff on movie.
Boy, look at those boys really ripping on Gene Kelly there.
Right?
Sorry, I just had to point that out.
That's funny.
Those boys really like Gene Kelly.
But a lot of people think this was written originally to be its own entity, but it was not. It's music that was just patchworked together around a story. And it all came together. It's an example of all these different elements that come together to create something that's perfect.
You know, I noticed, Tim, at the beginning, it actually said that the screenplay was based on inspiration from the song singing in there.
Yeah, inspired by singing.
Yeah, so. I found that interesting. Kind of goes with what
which
you're saying.
Which was one of his songs.
That's Arthur Freed's song, yeah.
Yeah. It just goes to show you, if you're an actor, you can get away with anything.
Of course.
I was kind of impressed that he jumped up on top of the cable car and then jumped down into the car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was an impressive move.
That was
yeah,
very,
it was.
He, yes.
He's pretty good physical.
Yeah.
Did he do his own stunts?
No nets, no nothing. And
Gene Kelly was very agile, and he liked to do his own stunts as much as possible. You ever see a film called The Pirates with him and Judy Garland?
Uh-uh.
You should check that out. He is really good at stunt work in that.
Oh, actually, cool. If you check out The Pirate, you're going to find out something very interesting, right, Tim?
Oh, yes. Actually, that corresponds to this film. Yes.
It does
besides
correspond.
The fact that both have Gene Kelly.
That's right. Because
speaking of music.
Speaking of music, there is a song in The Pirate called
Be a Clown.
Be a Clown. That sounds awful lot like
Make 'em Laugh in this song, in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Be a Clown is written by Cole Porter, and Donald O'Connor needed his big show piece number in this movie, and they're saying, what kind of song could we give him? And Arthur Freed said, oh, give me Overnight, and I'll get something to you. So Overnight, he came back the next day with Make 'em Laugh, which is the same melody line as Be a Clown.
Interesting.
And everyone knew it.
Thievery.
Gene Kelly knew it. Donald O'Connor knew it. But Arthur Freed was the producer. What can you do? And everyone just smiled and said, fabulous. Let's do this more. Yeah, if you really compare note for note, it's not very vague at all. It's pretty direct.
Wait, is it like Yikes. My Sweet Lord and what was it that was a song?
I don't know.
I don't know.
he's... What was that song? Remember there was the case where George Harrison got sued for My Sweet Lord because it ripped off, because basically it borrowed too much from He's So Fine by the Chiffons.
Oh.
Interesting. I never heard that.
You know, oh, yeah. That was big.
Now, a lot should be said.
And he lost.
Oh, that's okay.
Which I was kind of surprised.
Now, let's talk about Debbie Reynolds.
Yes,
we haven't talked about her yet.
That's right. She has shown up, and she's been driving with this strange man in her car. That's right.
And she was about 19 when she filmed this, I think.
She's very, very young.
She's very perky.
And Gene Kelly did not want her for this film at all.
Ooh,
he did not want her, and he held it against her. He did not treat her well at all.
Yeah, he was really mean to her, actually.
He was very mean to her. He went on record publicly and said he was. She also has acknowledged it. She was not a dancer, an accomplished dancer, known as a dancer. He needed a dancer in his mind. Makes sense. So the studio put her in the role, and he resented every bit of it, and he made her life hell this entire
film. I think he said things like, oh, here comes Debbie with two left feet, you know, like every time she'd try to dance.
Did he take it back later? I mean,
yes, he did.
Oh, okay.
He absolutely took it back. He said, I don't think Debbie's ever forgiven me. I hope she will. You know, I was very unkind to her during the making of that film.
Wow.
Because she became a star, and she showed them all. What she did was, and people don't, she is an amazing professional, and she started out that way in this film. Mm-hmm. She would have none of it, where everyone was trying to break her down. He would rehearse her, till her feet were bleeding, till she couldn't move.
Yeah.
Do it again. And she would. And she broke down, and during one rehearsal, and she was in a rehearsal space, she walked next door, and Fred Astaire was rehearsing. In his space. She was crying. He came over to her, said, what's wrong? She said, I can't get it. Everything I do, I'm in fear. I don't think I'm ever going to get this. And he looked at her and he said, I feel the same way every time I do this.
Wow.
Mm.
And she said that was the best advice, one of the most incredible moments she had.
Not to mention the fact that it came from Fred Astaire.
I know.
So she kept on plugging away. And you watch her dancing in this, especially in Good Morning, the song Good Morning that's coming up. She said, it was worse than childbirth making this movie.
Oh my gosh. She's more prolonged, right? And just as much pain.
Well, I'm sure the mental abuse is just really, really hard to take, especially when you're young and you're working with all these big stars and they're telling you that you're horrible.
All your input is you're inadequate. That's what he kept. You're inadequate. You're inadequate. Why are you here? You're inadequate. And she rose above it, and she made an incredible career for herself, and she's a sensational performer.
That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason for that. She's got the goods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Total
She's
side
fabulous.
Note, just really struck me when they were panning through the crowd here and showed different people dancing.
Mm-hmm.
The spider lady and that guy, totally like Gomez and Morticia Adams. Like, totally exactly. They're like dancing toward the camera like, oh my.
I do believe.
I wonder if that inspired that at
all. I do believe the spider lady is based on an actual silent movie star of the time who was known for being kind
You're
of
right.
goth and dramatic.
Before there was goth.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, before there was goth, yeah.
I'm sure. I just wonder, like, I mean, this is before they made that, the original series, right?
There's always been goth.
Yeah.
There's always been goth.
Yeah, just not called that.
That's right. Actually, you know, I'm trying to think of who was the actress. Was Theda Bara?
I can't remember, but I do know for a fact it was based on an actual silent movie actress.
I've heard the same thing.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a Hollywood party without showing a movie.
I know, right?
Which, believe it or not, at one point was quite a phenomenal thing to do in one's home.
Oh, it's very
sure.
Shishi lala.
Now it's just like,
especially because you don't even have it like in a special area. It's like, oh, I've just got it hooked up in the living room.
That's a nice widescreen TV they have.
Oh, yeah, flat screen too.
Would be great for playing video games.
Oh, this is great.
But this is the first time they've ever experienced sound.
That guy's got a great face for radio.
look at those teeth.
Oh, his lips look very dark.
Unison.
Also, I'd like to confess that my cousin is a horse.
But what I do like is a lens on it, which is great. Huh. And that's right, because I started off with records.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And now everyone's uh-oh.
And she doesn't like it. It's a beluga.
Vulgar.
It's like the internets. Right. They're never going to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. That's never going to amount to anything.
And no one in that room has any idea how it's going to revolutionize the mm-hmm. industry and their lives.
And digital. Why would you do that over film? I mean,
hang on.
Is
this
crappy.
Like three?
Don't get me started.
Is this like the jump to 3D? Will 3D truly revolutionize our lives?
I really hope not.
Oh my God, she's the cake girl.
Of course.
Uh-oh, embarrassing. Boy, that must have been so hard for her to pretend that she was in love with Gene Kelly's character.
Oh, I know.
I mean, really?
I know.
Well, once she proved herself, he respected her, that's for sure.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, to his credit, that's good. I mean, if he's going to be a little bit of a diva at the time.
You can understand his position. She's not a dancer.
I understand that. You know? Right. Yeah, totally. It's like, why would you hire this person?
You
I mean,
make
professionally,
the best
on
film,
his level, he's like, I don't get you guys. Why would you do that to me?
Get that confetti off. Good job, Debbie.
But she did it in like a little cute way. I mean, it totally worked.
Yeah, she's not letting it pull her down. It looks like it's a part of the dance. No, she's fabulous. Really?
And what's really funny is her voice is dubbed in this.
Her voice,
seriously?
Her voice is dubbed?
Not completely, but there's a number, and I'll point it out. She's dubbed. The studio didn't like her singing voice for one of the numbers. And in this movie, Singing in the Rain, of all things, her voice is dubbed when she's dubbing Lena Lamont's voice as a character.
Goodness. Oh, my
goodness. You're kidding me.
I am not
kidding
you.
I feel so betrayed.
Talk about life imitating art. No, that's
as well you should.
My world is crumbling.
That's Hollywood. I mean, a Hollywood movie about how asinine it is, you know, dubbing other people's voices, and here they are dubbing her voice when she's dubbing someone else's voice in the movie.
Wow. But that's very fitting, I think, because Hollywood never changes. Quite frankly, when they do try and let the actors sing for themselves nowadays, it comes out horrible. Like certain actors in Mamma Mia who shall remain nameless.
I still haven't seen that.
It was pretty bad.
Dude.
I can't stand her.
That had to be one take, you know. Because I can't imagine them doing that a few times.
Oh, they would if they needed to.
But it would take
a
while to clean her up and get her hair ready.
Fine.
And
okay.
Yeah. It's like 20-minute break,
ooh.
Everybody.
Gene, what are you doing?
One of the few guys who could bust into the room like that, and they're like, oh, it's you.
Yeah. And that is not Debbie Reynolds driving. Did you see that?
Oh, she looked like Debbie Reynolds.
That was a double.
Well, I wonder if the Teamsters were powerful enough then to make sure it was not Debbie Reynolds driving. Mm.
I don't think they would interfere with someone driving in a shot.
Well, but why would they switch the person?
Because she wasn't available. Or it's just like, we don't need her in that shot.
Interesting.
Yeah, that happens.
The leeway, back in 52, they thought they could get away with more with an audience
now?
Catching on.
I guess. But, I mean, Gene Kelly works on a day when she doesn't.
What were you saying, Serge?
No, I mean, that happens all the time, production.
It
sometimes,
does,
sometimes,
but what
you
I'm
just, sometimes on one day, you just don't need to have the person in, so you get a photo double, and it's going by that quickly, and no one's going to be able to tell.
Yeah.
And that happens today.
I know it happens today, but it happens less obviously today. That shot was very obvious it wasn't her, and it was held for a long time, considering. Mm-hmm.
And she's driving, like, face
you know,
toward
if,
the camera.
If you hadn't pointed it out, I wouldn't have noticed.
I've never noticed
that's because you're
that
looking
before,
at Gene
actually.
Kelly.
No, that's why,
a lot of people are looking at Gene Kelly coming out. If you watch just her in the car, you can see that.
I wonder if there's a story behind that. I bet there is.
There's no story. It's just they shot on a different day. They didn't want to call her in.
Well, I know, but usually the lesser person doesn't get a day off when the more important person doesn't.
I'll have to go back through the call sheets and try and find out.
Yeah, you do that. Okay. You do that. Email me. Let me know.
Yeah, that's right.
that was a kind of a good way to do a little bit of exposition there. That was 3 weeks ago. Are you still thinking about
that? Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It wasn't awkward. It was like, well, it's been 3 weeks.
Right.
You know, it was just like a good way to seg.
Yeah, totally. Good point. What a look.
I think we're leading up into something, are we?
Yeah, it looks like
I like the build up into musical numbers. I always find it interesting.
How they're gonna do it?
Well, yeah,
that
they kinda,
awesome.
they kinda lead up into
Make
it and then you have a bit of music. See? And then it goes in full.
This number is interesting as far as what's being lip synced and what's live. This is obviously live. What he's doing, what he's singing here,
right, and what he's playing, because he's playing.
Well, someone off camera, I think, is playing. Probably, I doubt if he is hitting the actual chords on that piano.
I don't know.
That'd be awfully skillful. I mean, like, I can't relate to that level of skill on something like that. But
well,
I'm not. I wouldn't put it past
him. Yeah. Now this is lip syncing here.
But yeah. I want you all to chime in and let me know what you think. The end of this number, where he runs up the wall, does the somersault backwards,
yes,
and then he goes through the next wall, and the number ends.
Yes.
That sounds very live to me. It sounds like he's singing live because he's so exhausted, so out of breath, and you hear it in his singing that matches his body perfectly. So let me know what your thoughts
That's
are.
Interesting.
Well, I know the best way to lip sync is to actually do it live while you're doing it, and then they just dub it over to make it sound better. And that's with ADR, where they go in the studio sessions and they match what they did on set with,
well,
they make a cleaner dialogue track.
Either that or what they do, they just play a click track and you would just sing along with the click track, and that's what you'd hear.
Yeah.
But I think that's what they usually did. I mean, they pre-record everything, then bring it into the studio, and then do that. I mean, usually. Ooh.
Talk about physicality. You really can't beat this number.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. I mean, this
really
number
is
great. Yeah.
And the coordination of everything.
Now, it has to be noted that Donald O'Connor did do a series of movies with Francis the Talking Mule.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was after this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He made a good fortune off that.
Yep.
See, now, as amazing as this number is, I do have to say that he certainly has it a little bit easier because they keep cutting different scenes together. Like, it's quick shots, like right there,
right,
cutting
right.
closer. So
it's not
like
shot.
All in one take, which would have been superhuman.
Right.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is his physicality is a lot different than Gene Kelly's, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and he's definitely more of a clown.
He's more of a clown, but he's also the way he's able to move his limbs.
Mm-hmm.
This is funny
he's
right anyway. There. That's
more
funny.
Loose.
Oh, this whole thing, yeah. Oh, he's very, very loose.
He'd always gone on record that he came up with the idea for that dummy.
The dummy.
There.
Oh, I
it
love
was sitting
that.
Next to him in the corner of a stage or somewhere, and he just started playing with
it's
it.
Brilliant.
And he said, use that. Do it.
Yeah. I did that in a play once in high school. I did. Seriously. It was fun. What it was that basically during any high school production, what we do is during one production, we throw a dummy off of the catwalk and it would land.
Mm.
It's a high school type of thing.
Sure. Well, funny.
So I just played along with it and made something of it. Good times.
Oh, I love this move, running on the floor
classic.
Like that.
Yeah.
Classic.
Now it's after this. Listen to his vocals from here on out.
Okay.
That's live.
Wow.
That's live.
Hear his voice, hear his breathing, right here. That's live.
Oh, yeah.
This is dubbed. right there.
That's dubbed right there.
Yeah.
Or that's ADR.
But I found interesting for that one section, he was live.
Yeah, but that's what I mean about they do it live and then they re-record over it later to clean it up.
Or they recorded it, or they did
or
it.
The, or vice
there's
versa.
There's different ways. Or they could have ADR'd it afterwards and it could have still been out of breath. So lots of different things.
That is a gorgeous dress.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
Did Edith Head and voice ruins everything.
Right?
That's a nice light coming up on her, too.
Did she do that voice live, by the way, or did they do that?
No, that's her. That's her.
That's her
that's
actual
live.
Voice?
Well, that's Gene
Hagen.
Hagen.
I mean,
like, does she always talk like that?
No.
I was going to say.
No.
This is Gene Hagen being a wonderful actress.
Right on.
That's why she was nominated for an Academy Award.
It's probably like a funny voice she always used with her friends and was like, oh, I'd love to use this for a character sometime.
She's evil.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess this sort of mirrors what was going on in real life, because right now they have to do a love scene and they hate each other, and in real life, Gene Kelly and Debbie Reynolds did not get along in this movie.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Oh, you mean like...
We were talking about it earlier, about how he was mean to her, and yet she still had to play in love with
him.
No,
wait, I'm sorry. I thought you meant...
He Gene was Hagen, no.
With this actress,
oh,
also.
No.
Like, I'm like, wow.
That would have
really
been super
was,
meta.
Yeah,
so,
it wasn't like, you know, a diva fist fight feeling in the air whenever Debbie Reynolds and Gene Kelly got together. He was just very curt with her.
Yeah.
And there was no, you know...
I can see that.
There's no real respect.
The experienced one that it just doesn't have time for the one that can't keep up.
But they were still professional. I mean, it wasn't that they were always cats and dogs.
You know, what's interesting is I like, you know, of course, in the because it's silent movie days, I like how the director is talking them through it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's great. You could. I actually watched Metropolis 2 days ago. It's a restored version that's got some things added back and some text to replace the missing chunks. And I was talking about that with my friend I was watching it with. It's like, they could be saying anything.
Yeah.
Case in point.
Just
you know, you can say anything as long as you look the right way on a silent film.
There's no way to tell what they're saying, because especially with the way that they would crank the camera, would come out at different speeds, and there's just no way.
And I was saying, like, geeks of the time, detail geeks of the time would have been like, I know what they're saying in that shot. I watched it 87 times.
Well, I mean, but the interesting thing is it's 52, and I mean, the silent movies were just like 23 years off. I mean, they'd been gone for about 23 years, and that's about it. Jazz Singer was the first talkie in 29, and just took a
27.
Oh, was it 27?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, Wings was 29. No? Actually, Wings was 20. It was the first film to win the Academy Award for Best Picture.
Right.
But it was a silent film.
Jazz Singer was 27.
So I think it just took a few years for them to cycle through. And I think by 30, 31, most of the silent films were gone. And the last one, I think, was Modern Times by Charlie Chaplin.
Okay.
Which was intentionally done to be anachronistic.
Well, the title's appropriate.
But my point being is that, you know, people still remember what it was like to go to a talk, to a silent film, for the most part. Mm-hmm.
It's almost a different art form entirely, really.
Oh, yeah.
Because you've got live music and you've got, you know, just a way different way of expressing the story.
Yeah.
If only it were that easy.
Right.
That's right. Just
a typical producer. It's easy. Just da, 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 da.
Just add talking.
I say that with a lot of love because I've produced films. And yeah. It always seems easier.
See, now this is where they realize.
What do we do about Lena?
That's right. And
Revolution.
Here we go. Revolution. Do we have a date on there? No, they're keeping the dates off.
Here's our montage. This is a great montage sequence.
And right.
Yeah.
So now we're at 34 minutes. It's great. So basically we're going into the second act. Wow, look at that.
Technicolor. Nice. They remastered
this. Oh, a little keying there, a little green screen action.
Well, I mean,
yeah, cool.
I was saying this looks really good to him.
Well, this was a 2002 remaster, and this is one of the first films that Warner Brothers used their ultra resolution process on. And what that does is it's really great for Technicolor films that use three-strip Technicolor, three different elements that have to be overlapped to create one picture. You lose detail because of that. So they took the three strips and individually, pixel by pixel, aligned every pixel in those three strips to make it as sharp as it can be.
Wow.
You're seeing it sharper now than what people saw in its original release.
Okay.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that.
Because
of
the ultra-resolution process that Warner uses for Technicolor. Now, they mastered this in 1080i, and you can't do that for Blu-ray, so they are going back, as we're speaking, doing this, and making an entirely new master in 1080p from their ultra-resolution remastering for a Blu-ray of Singin' in the Rain right now.
That's amazing, because already it looks great.
On a standard def, it's nice, but the Blu-ray is going to be, I think, one of the best Technicolor representations out.
It's going to jump out of the screen.
I got to say, these are nice, nice numbers.
And, you know, even though, you know, we're all familiar with Debbie Reynolds, so she stands out, I think she would stand out anyway in this little number, which is appropriate because they pick her out of the chorus for this after this number.
I think you're right.
She just has so much life and charisma coming from her face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
I've always loved Debbie Reynolds. I think she's just great.
Yeah.
Nice boom shot. There's incredible boom shots in this film.
Oh, wow.
This is our clothes horse fashion sequence that all the people who love clothes like.
That's right.
But I think it's appropriate for the time.
Yeah, this is what, late 20s, yeah.
This would have been like the part that the costuming people would have been stoked about, probably.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, this will be fun. Let's make up some stuff.
All the retro fashions.
There's nice retro fashions. Well, yeah, retro is like whatever, 20, 25 years removed. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine wearing that to the beach? I mean, really, like ballet slippers laced up with, you
know,
right? Satin ribbons.
Oh, yeah, you get a little sand under there. That'd be real nice.
Yeah.
A cunning hat.
Well, this woman's having
hat
trouble.
Hat is smarter than you are.
What, you know, this is all nice, but I'm wondering, like, what is this? What's this doing here?
Yeah.
Structurally, this is kind of odd.
Well, it's a commentary on the period.
I guess, but it's, I mean, it's rather long commentary on the period. We're getting like 10, 12 different fashions.
Why do I feel like eating a Hostess snowball now after that pink outfit?
Well, I mean, they're just satirizing the types of films that were starting to be made with the early talkies, and this is what was made.
Okay, all right, okay, I'll buy that. So these were they were making fashion. I mean, this is like TV. It was the TV of the well, it was the TV of the time.
Yeah,
yeah, because there was no TV. You had radio, and if you go to the you know
you
the, movies,
the movies,
and you see
had
things
little
like
shorts
that.
Before the films.
So you'd have
see
a
what
musical
the latest
piece
fashion
and
is.
See what the fashions are. Okay, so instead of having the you know E or style, you'd have this.
Exactly.
And yeah. News too. They'd put news at the
yeah. There was newsreels, absolutely. So that's what this was about. That's really fascinating.
And of course, it's an excuse to have a big glitzy number with bright fashion.
Well, we'd sell it.
Sure.
That's nice. Yeah. But of course, it would have been in black and white, but that's okay.
Right.
There's Rita Moreno down lower left.
Oh, my well, God.
Now, who?
That's right.
Wow.
Who said who?
Oh.
Duncan, you got
I didn't hear the name that you guys said.
You get a timeout.
Rita Moreno.
Rita Moreno.
Okay, she I know was, I'm familiar with the name, but I can't think of anything.
She won an Oscar for West Side Story.
Oh, okay.
She was Anita.
She looked. Oh, she looked familiar. I just couldn't place her.
Bernardo's
completely different
sister,
hair,
right?
That's why.
Anita is Bernardo's sister.
No, she's Bernardo's girlfriend.
No. I thought it was girlfriend or wife. In West Side Story, Anita.
Been a while since I saw that.
It probably girlfriend, but definitely they were romantically involved.
They were.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
It's Maria was Bernardo's sister.
Right.
Thank you. Okay.
And she was in love with Tony.
Yes.
Played by Richard Boehmer. Whole different thing. That won a lot of Academy Awards.
It was a great movie.
Tear a pheasant. Sounds awfully never. Violent.
You know, the upcoming... he dances in the upcoming musical number, right? And she just sort of stands on the ladder. I wonder if they did that because he wanted to dance and he didn't really have a lot of faith in her.
I would
plausible.
I would say there's a lot of credibility to that theory.
I think the only real dance number she does is "Good Morning" and then the thing at the beginning where she jumps out of the cake
and "Singing in the Rain."
And "Singing in the Rain." Well, not he does "Singing in the Rain" by himself. It's only the title sequence
of "Singing in the
Rain."
But
that's like only very short.
Okay.
So that kind of makes sense.
Well, she proved him wrong, so there.
She didn't stand on ladders too long after this movie. Yeah. She graduated from standing on ladders well.
Do you know what she did after this?
Well, I mean, she went into C-52. I'm trying to think when she sang the Abba Dabba song. When that was, what movie that is. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh,
she
I know
was famous
song,
for the Abba Dabba Dabba Goes the Monkey and the
Abba Dabba Honeymoon. Which,
Abba
by
honeymoon.
The way, going back to earlier conversation, Duncan, Abba Dabba Honeymoon was also done by Spike Jones. But
great to know.
Thought I'd let you
great to
that's
know.
Where she really got noticed. So that must have been maybe before this. But then Tammy and the Bachelor, I mean, that was like 56. So I don't know what after 52, what she did. But she was really hot and became big in Tammy and the Bachelor.
And she got married to Eddie Fisher at some point.
Yes, she did.
And then
he left her.
For Elizabeth Taylor, but not before giving birth to the...
Miss Carrie Fisher.
Miss Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia herself.
Nice shot with elephant door.
Holy
that's
crap.
Great.
Wait a second. That's Carrie Fisher's mom?
Yes. Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Have you ever seen the movie Postcards from the Edge?
I just have a confession to make right now.
Star Wars stuff here.
The only musicals I watched growing up were viewed under duress by my mother and my sister. I've always been into sci-fi and action, and the movie that has always been a part of me is Star Wars.
Right. Mm.
Right.
That's my thing. I don't remember the first time I saw this. I don't remember the last time I saw it, but it's been a long, long time.
Now, let me ask you about that. Are you enjoying this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
there are musicals that I enjoy, especially now that I'm an adult and that I know a lot more about film and, you know, I'm not being forced to watch I really want to watch something else.
No, I understand that. But I'm just curious about how it's striking you. That's all. Just coming from the fact
And the colors are dazzling and you know, just knowing a lot of the history behind it is a big deal. And
that's a nice
thinking
shot.
About it from a filmmaker perspective. Wow. Yeah, that really is.
Look at that.
The chronology is that Debbie Reynolds has gone on record. I mean, she was the one that was famous.
Wow.
She was the one that was identified, but she said, and then I suddenly became Princess Leia's mother.
Yeah.
Right.
At a certain point in time.
At some point. So, yeah. Wow. That's awesome.
Is she still
with us? Or
yeah,
oh,
absolutely.
Yes.
I would have thought.
She doesn't really do acting very much anymore.
No. Mm. Well, she did a one-woman show about 5 miles from us in the last year and a half.
Really? North Hollywood.
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
I miss this.
She goes
Damn
around
it.
The country. She's touring. She does her one-woman show.
I will
she's
have to look
cabaret
for
cabaret stuff. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Okay. We'll have to look
she's
for the
going.
Debbie Reynolds show. There's actually, as Tim did tell me, there is a Dick Van Dyke show in town, by the way, too. He is a one-man show, too.
He's doing his one-man show
right
now.
His one-man show. So mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know he was
I got to mark
alive.
These down on the calendar. Oh, yeah. He's totally
absolutely.
Right.
You kidding?
Another big musical
They're
guy.
They're working. They're still working. They're doing their thing.
Wow. Okay. I thought she'd retired.
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
All right.
So, yeah, I'm not really that familiar with, like, stars and such from this era, and certainly not of musicals.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, though, just in general, I wanted to share this at the very beginning. I think Singing in the Rain is iconic to the level that even someone like me who's a non-musical type, and I don't go around talking about musicals with other people, but I think pretty much everyone in the whole world could sing the first line of the song Singing in the Rain.
Is this like
because this is so prevalent.
Is this a good starter musical to get you going on the path of musicals?
The path of musicals.
Well, now, that's a good question. It does depend on what kind of background a person would come from. If we're talking about, like, if I had a friend that really wasn't into him or had never seen one, I don't know if this would be the first one I showed him.
Right.
Or at the least, I'd have to give him some context. Because what makes this interesting
dance.
Is, like, knowing the era and what's going on in the film industry.
Right.
Right? I don't know. There are a lot of musicals that to me, spend so much time on dance numbers that I forget what's going on in the story. And when it comes back to it, I'm like, finally, we're back. You know, I want to see what happens next in the story.
Because usually most of the stories aren't actually that good and compelling and integral to the pieces. I mean, the pieces kind of
become
separate.
I mean, I think it's really the same ratio as with any genre of film. You know, there are compelling stories and then there are not so compelling stories. And
well, actually, you know,
I think musicals, kind of like, let me make this comparison.
Yeah.
If you're looking at sci-fi now, for instance, the Star Wars prequels, in my opinion, spend way too much time on the visual effects.
Right.
Right.
And that's a mistake, and that hurts the story. Similarly, you can take a musical and spend way too much time on the singing and the dancing and not enough on the story and the characters, and it doesn't really become something that draws you in and that you really want to be a part of.
Right.
Same kind of thing. It's just basically not using the art form very well.
Or an action film that has
any
know,
of them.
You know,
yeah.
Just basically
pick your
takes
genre.
Too much time. I mean, it's
there
not,
always has to be a balance.
Mistakes,
and it's
but
not an integral. On the whole thing is they have a good story to this, and they have a good spine to it.
Yes.
The backdrop is compelling.
And the characters are believable.
And likable.
I mean, and likable. Yeah, exactly.
And that's really the key formula for any movie, which is often forgotten. They think it has to be, you know, more dancing for a musical, more action for, you know, an action movie. But it's all about story. Story
really
is king.
It really is. Well, and that's what hurts a lot of films nowadays with easy special effects. Like the
Absolutely.
Second Matrix movie was a lot less good than the first one for that reason. So anyway,
getting
back to this.
And I was wrong. She does dance in this number. I was totally wrong.
You are so
got off that ladder. Yeah, she got off the ladder.
She did
Big
get off
bonanza.
The ladder.
Big bonanza.
Diction coach.
Great scene. This is wonderful Gene Hagen scene. And you recognize the woman on the right. That is Kathleen Freeman.
Yes.
Jerry Lewis's foil in a lot of Jerry Lewis movies.
And she was in the Blues Brothers. She played,
yes,
she
the
played,
nun. Mother Superior, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. I love that movie. By the way, when are we doing that? I want to be a part
Singing
of
Singing in the Rain. Singing in the Rain. Let's do yes. Singing in the Rain.
2011.
I can't stand him.
You guys are such nerds for this movie.
Con.
That's awesome.
Kids. And I do believe that Adelaide and Guys and Dolls yes, borrowed heavily yes, from yes. this, well, the Ju- whole concept
but,
of that character.
But Judy, but Born Yesterday was after this, too. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Did Judy Holliday borrow from this, too?
You know,
I would say
knows,
probably.
But a dumb
probably.
Blonde is a dumb blonde, but I love when it's how, done well, it's a beautiful
I love,
thing.
I love how they all have to learn how to talk.
Mm. Now, here's one of the most amazing dance numbers.
Yeah.
This is astounding.
But let's go back to this for a second. I mean, here, the thing is that, I mean, actors, there's a distinction of actors. There were still actors who could speak well. I mean, basically, they performed on Broadway and in theater, and then they would graduate to movies. People like Clark Gable, you know, who started on Broadway. And so it's interesting that there was already a division of actors who were from the theater and actors who just went straight into silent films and could do nothing else, you know, did not have the voice.
Right.
That you do need to have when you're an actor, which is interesting, and how it developed itself. But you also have a lot of actors right now who go into acting basically
based on their looks.
Based on their looks, who have awful, just don't have strong voices,
and who aren't comedic geniuses like Donald O'Connor.
Right, and usually the actors who, in my opinion, who excel these days are the ones with good, unique voices, good voice work, excellent.
And good training, good back. Well, I mean, look at Meryl Streep or Edward Norton, Paul Giamatti. I mean, Glenn Close. These are people who trained, you know, they went to Yale Drama. They know how to perform.
Well, there's other actors who didn't go to Yale or Juilliard who can still act too.
Oh yeah, I don't mean to say that, but I mean that they understand, they really understand the craft of acting.
Oh yeah.
Now this Moses song, I'm not familiar of where this came from as a pre-existing Arthur Freed number. I don't think it was written for the film directly. It must have been written for the film directly. Well, where would it have been lifted from with these lyrics? Interesting. I didn't do it. I did percussion.
Percussion's okay.
Thank you.
Good job, Tim.
Thank you.
I like the tapping. I like those shoes. Look at those shoes.
Yeah, those are great.
I'm sorry. Donald O'Connor totally keeps up with Gene
Kelly.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Totally. I'm not, you know, my eyes aren't only going to Gene Kelly. They're going to both of them.
Look, he's going. Gene let him go.
Yeah, Gene was generous. You know, he wasn't, I have to be in the spotlight all the time. He let the other actors have their moments.
I guess he only had the energy to be mean to one person, huh?
Oh.
Aw, poor Gene.
The universe got its revenge. He did do Xanadu.
Oh my gosh, I forgot he was in that. Matter of fact, I tried to blank out that whole movie.
Only that, I think he directed it.
Are you kidding?
I think he did direct it.
I don't think he directed it.
But it does have a great soundtrack. But it's ELO. Electric Light Orchestra.
Well, I only watched it once, so I can't really be an expert on Xanadu.
Yeah. No, but the soundtrack actually is really good.
This is where they go to town, dance-wise. Yeah. Watch this.
Wow.
And the music just kicks it up. It's great.
And this is really hard to do. I don't know. See, unless you've danced, you can't really appreciate how hard it is. I used to be a dancer, and it's just, I mean, tapping is fun, but to get the timing just right is really hard. And they're doing this in sync.
Right.
And, you know, they're not just walking, they're vowel A.
That is not easy.
And the number on the A.
A.
A. A. I like that quiet while recording. Red light. Ooh, go red, on, red, red light. Light.
Come on.
No, red light's not on yet. You like the cameras in the booth.
Mm-hmm.
It is a blimp. Oh my god, look at this. They have another booth.
It's like a hide. It's like
talking to the plant.
Right?
That's right.
It's like, it's like they're filming wildlife.
Hey, Duncan, next time we shoot something, we need to set something up like
that. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I'm down.
We need the booth. We need the booth. We need the blimp. And
it is kind of funny you think of them, you know, back in the days before they had boom mics and like trying to figure out how to make it work.
Sorry, where's the lavalier?
Round tones.
I love that little the whole little wrinkle that she wrinkles her nose. It's like, I'm so proud of myself.
This sounds like a dying cat.
This poor director is absolutely frazzled. A new technology, trying to create a film around it, and then having a lead actress like her at the same time. It's a little much for him.
You mean like 3D?
Like 3D. But he's at the end of his
rope. You're really on about the whole 3D
bashing
thing.
She's
dumb.
You know, I didn't think about this before, but it would have really changed the culture of the set overall, because there's a whole thing when you shoot something now about sound. You really like, and everybody knows all the rules about being quiet.
Right.
But like, you know, earlier when they were watching The Number where they showed all the fashions, and here the producer and the director are just kind of chatting while they're shooting and the guy's singing. I'm like, whoa, never thought about it that way, but totally different. Totally different. I mean, think about the grips and everything else. Why not? You're an actress.
Why did? Well, I guess they figured out how to. This is how when they started figuring out where do we put the microphone.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you can hear her beating heart because they put it next to her heart.
That's awesome.
That makes sense.
Poor Lena.
Everybody's speaking on me.
Laura, you do that scary well.
Well, I used to sing Adelaide songs for auditions, so it's the same voice.
Nice.
And Adelaide's from what?
Guys and Dolls.
Okay. Yeah.
A person could develop a cold.
A poison could develop a cold. I'm not going to sing it.
Thank you. Hey, at least they had the slate down.
And then she turns her head and she
goes, thump, the thump.
That's so funny. I mean, obviously, it means based on what the first experiences were when they were trying to do this.
Oh, yeah. Just like, it must have been maddening, really.
Yeah. And I think when I first saw this, I was like, oh, okay, well, all these things make sense. You know, they'd have to work these things out at some point.
I like how he has to explain it to her every time because she doesn't understand the concept of how it's working.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hilarious. It's also for the audience's sake. I mean, to keep it, you know, the audience up to speed with how it's all progressing.
But I think, you know, character-wise, I think it's interesting too because there are some people who, you know, when you have new technology come along, it's hard to clue it. Oh no.
He's coming unhinged.
Oh, and this is the preview to end all previews.
This is the preview. That's right.
Over well.
This is when things change.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. I like that tie. It's very bold.
Donald O'Connor's?
Yes. Kind of expect him to have a clown suit on underneath the tie.
I like how Gene Kelly wears his hat, just like tilted to the side.
Yeah.
Not like Donald O'Connor has it. Oh, I like that 100%
all
talking.
That would have been the sort of, you know,
talking.
Rogue badass kind of thing to do then, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. she thought she came to a 3D picture, but this is actually a talkie.
Well, and what's so great about her performance is that she really takes it seriously, the fact that she doesn't understand. You know, that's the key to all great comedy is taking
pretty
it
dense.
Seriously.
Oh, right.
She's too vain to understand. She looks pretty, and that's all she sees.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, but that's all pearls. That's all she ever depended on. I got to tell you, I come from, you know, Washington, Baltimore area, and it's definitely got a hint of the Baltimore accent.
The Baltimore.
There. Just a hint.
Lansfield. And I can't stand him.
The audience thinks it's a comedy.
But actually, you know, it's interesting because the other woman, you know, she's got a good voice. But of course, she wasn't a star before, but now you have here the one who was a star before. And
yeah, she was obviously hired because she had a good voice.
Good and loud.
Yes.
She just doesn't get it.
The cane.
It's like a 2x4.
Now what's that about? Oh, they still kept it in.
Did they not have a way to mix it at all? Do you think that would have actually happened, or are they adding that for
effect in this film?
You know,
it was primitive technology.
No, I think they were just going with one track.
Well, no one thought to do ADR, I guess, huh?
Well, I mean, you couldn't do ADR. No, literally, it was a record player that ran in sync with the film. That's the whole thing.
You didn't have multi-track at that time.
Yeah.
It is funny when you think about how much sound has progressed in films, mm-hmm. because little sounds like him dropping the cane, I mean, if they weren't so advanced in how they do it, you would hear that stuff.
True.
But you don't.
So wait, multi-track though, like the record's separate, so why not just record a separate record later while you play the film, while you project the film onto a wall?
At the stage, and this is a sound recording in its infancy, and what they knew to do at this time was record on set the sound for the picture, sync up what you recorded on set to the
and
picture,
just play it.
Play
and
it
that's
for
it.
The film.
So nobody...
It didn't. It's things like this that bring up what you're saying for them to come up with ideas of how to do that later to correct it. Right now, it's at infancy, so they don't even know the problems
yet. I just kind of wondered, like, I would have thought somebody would think of that, like, hey, wait a minute, it sounds like crap. Why don't we do something about it
because this is a comedic effect.
This is,
Well, that's what came to my question is, do you think that would have really happened in, like,
it
early sound films, or would this...
But that's
a preview.
But that's why they're doing this here, because they're dramatizing... You know, they're dramatizing the whole thing of how they discovered it and centering it around one film. And
but of course, now the soundtrack is encoded
out
into the film strip itself.
Right.
So they don't have that problem anymore, fortunately.
Right.
And then, of course, you have the problems with it, with how the projector.
I love you.
She's smiling. Look at this.
She's smiling
oblivious.
And he's hiding.
What can we do to save this picture?
Uh-oh.
Worst picture ever.
I liked it.
She's completely...
Precursor to comic book guy.
Yeah.
This is what turns the movie around this night in their lives.
And this was, of course, a really hard scene to shoot.
Right through the rain.
Especially for Debbie.
That's a beautiful shot.
This was a hard scene because...
Dancing.
Dancing.
Okay.
And, you know, she was dancing until her feet were bleeding.
It's been a while since I've seen this film, so...
Gene Kelly was very competitive, naturally, as a person. And one of his favorite things was to be the first production done on the lot that day, finished with shooting.
Compared to any other film
that was shooting.
On any given day,
usually. Right. And to show how on top of it they were. And during this number, he was dead set on getting this number done by, like, whatever it was, 5:30. That was their cutoff day, time for that day. And he just gave Debbie Reynolds hell in order to get this next take, because we got to get this done. Because he wanted to be the first production wrapped for that day on the lot.
So was it different then? Did they have, like, just set... like hours of the day, like a regular job that they would shoot, or because they wouldn't have been shooting same times, you know, different productions.
They have their cutoff time before they enter into, you know, overtime and golden time and all this. So he wanted, and that's the goal, is to be wrapped by that time for the day, and that was his edict, was that we finished by that time. He hated it that they wouldn't be prepared and professional enough to wrap it when they said they're going to wrap it, and if they go into overtime unexpectedly or something.
Interesting perspective.
So,
well, he was a perfectionist, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So,
well, there's just so many things that go into finishing at your 12-hour mark,
right?
Or not as opposed. I mean, seeing it as just the professionalism and preparedness is kind of a narrow view.
Like
typical
said,
actor
was,
view, but
he was,
you know,
pretty competitive in that respect.
Mm. But I just find it interesting that he would have compared to other productions on the lot. Does that mean they all had the same call time? every day?
That's likely, you know, they started at 7. I mean, I'm assuming they did 7 to 7s.
Well, weird. It's just, I know, like, you know.
Well, I don't know. When you did track, was always usually 7 to 7?
Theoretically, but if we went a little late the day before, we would start a little later the next day. I mean, it would all depend on what was going on. And certainly when you're looking at other productions, I mean, by the end of the week, one's starting at 7, one's starting at 10, one's got to be in early at 4 because they did, you know, something different the day before. Or maybe they went on location then overnight, so their call time's 1 p.m. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well,
there's variables to that, but I think there's also a general sense of timing.
Right. I think
over the lot. Right. What a work day is.
Right. Generally, I'm assuming. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, but I'm assuming that it was.
I'm not saying that it's all uniform. I'm saying that as a generality within the time frame.
I gotcha. I was just trying to learn, like, you know, because heck, if I know how they shot things in the 50s, you know, I don't know what that film culture is like. I know what it's like now. I mean, it could be very, very different.
This is a very famous Arthur Freed song. Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney sang it in like Babes in Arms or one of their numbers, one of their movies. And she's dead. I mean, she's just dead, tired, and frustrated. And and she has to have this euphoria.
Her feet are bleeding. I mean, and
smile,
that happened.
Smile, fun, fun, fun.
I know. And that happened a lot with women dancers because they had to dance in heels.
Wow,
and
yeah.
It's not proper footwear, you know the, for dancing.
Look at that, dancing down those stairs.
She's
wow.
Bad, but the famous remark is that, you know, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, it was that, Fred Astaire, the great dancer, the most incredible dancer. And was it Ginger Rogers that said, I do everything that he does, but backwards?
Backwards and in heels.
In heels.
In heels.
Right.
And, you know, the heels weren't, I mean, nowadays they build tap heels better. You know, they're better built for tap dancing. But back then, I'm sure it was all about fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Look at her face. Look how happy. She's like, yay.
I can't get enough of this.
I certainly hope she got paid well enough.
Hmm.
Well, it made her career, so.
Yeah.
That it did. She made her career because she took the opportunity and really did it.
Yeah. Now, I'm sorry if I missed it. Did we discuss it? How did she get the role?
She was under contract and the studio wanted her. They wanted to groom her. And start a career and nurture her along.
Back in the days when they had stars
contracts
under contracts
and studio
and
contracts.
The studios controlled their careers.
Mm-hmm. So she was assigned this and assigned over Gene Kelly's not being happy about it.
Do you know at all who Gene Kelly wanted?
No.
Okay.
I find it interesting that they would... Well, I guess looking at it in the like, you know, studio contract sense, it wouldn't have mattered what another actor wanted.
Well,
it would just be what the producers thought
laugh,
would be the good
laugh,
idea.
Laugh, laugh, laugh,
but this
laugh.
Is Gene Kelly we're talking about. Gene Kelly wasn't just anybody.
Right.
He was
that's,
also.
That's true. That's
I
true.
Mean, he was Gene Kelly and he was the director.
Yeah.
What do you mean can't make it a musical?
She's a triple threat.
I like, you know, I like Donald O'Connor's tie. It's very Technicolor.
And his handkerchief
matched.
That's
what I said earlier.
You saw his handkerchief.
Yeah, totally did.
I
totally
sorry,
want
I
to get
that.
Those to wear with tie. A suit sometimes.
That is a nice tie.
Wait a minute. Oh,
I got me an idea.
This is the second
light
idea.
Light bulb goes off. His eyes.
Watch my mouth.
Bright eye, white eyes do.
Yeah.
Look at that.
He could do that for half an hour and I'd be entertained.
I love Gene Kelly. It's great. What?
What that was very New York. What?
Very. Cool.
I think we can pull it off.
And that still happened.
Yep. Right.
Like Marty Nixon, who always dubbed for people like Natalie Wood in West Side Story.
And Audrey Hepburn on My Fair Lady.
It still happened.
Yeah.
We can do this.
We can. Oh, and I love the handshake. That's how Ooh. They know the idea is going to happen.
That was some smooch there.
Awesome.
Here's the number.
What number, Tim?
I don't know. It's inclement, it's inclement weather.
Is this a stormy weather?
Vocalizing in inclement weather.
That's now, you know, the history behind this, talk about being provinces. A trooper. Gene Kelly had a 103-degree fever. He was sick as a dog, this entire Singin' in the Rain number, shoot.
Oh, and she was kissing him while he was sick. Eww.
And,
she had Vaseline on her lips.
And he had to be euphoric in the midst of his agony and turmoil, and he does the most euphoric number of his career while he's sick as a dog, and his suit... What material is that? Tweed or wool? It's a wool
tweed
suit.
Or wool,
that's
yeah.
a wool suit, and it shrunk due to the rain. They didn't take that into account.
Man.
So with all the water hitting him, he had to go through suit after suit after suit because it was starting to tighten up, and it would rise. His legs would just rise up, and they'd have to switch clothes. And this is a night shoot, and they'd go till late in the evening. It was all tarped off.
But wasn't it inside a studio?
No, wait, actually, I don't think this was a night shoot. This is a back lot. Yeah. But it's tarped off. So they could have shot it during the day.
Oh, now, okay.
They shot this at MGM, right?
Yeah.
I was going to ask what back lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, MGM, which I guess now Sony, the old lot Sony.
Sony.
Oh, right.
And technically, what a nightmare.
There's not a lot of it yet left.
Technicolor cameras, 1952 technology, and rain to shoot a dance number.
True.
I mean,
but they made the rain, right?
Yep, that's all sprinklers.
Yeah, yeah.
But just to have that much rain and the camera and the boom and everything and the cinematography the way it is, who needed that extra element of rain through this whole thing? I'm sure it was a nightmare.
Oh, sure.
And that, look at this beautiful shot. Beautiful shot on his face.
Yeah. Right
yeah.
There. And also, actually, let's talk about the rain. It's not easy to light rain.
You have to backlight it, right, in order for it to
Otherwise, it doesn't show up.
Yeah.
So. And practically for the actors, the rain is always really cold. It's cold water. I've done things where I've been rained on, and it's cold.
So when you have a cold and when you're dead sick, it's not the best environment for you.
I know, right? Of course, if you're already sick, at least it's a cool environment as opposed to being too warm in a wool suit, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not to downplay his professionalism and endurance.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this is, like, one of the most iconic scenes in film.
Yeah, There's a shot coming up, which is one of my most favorite shots and moments in a movie. Every time I see it, I get euphoric. It just, and I'll point it out to you. It's a combination of camera move, the swell of the music, and Gene Kelly's dancing. It's a triple...
Is it where he's spinning around the umbrella and it kind of pulls back?
Yes, he has an umbrella out in front of him and the camera pulls back as he goes from left to right, I believe, on screen. It is like the defining, iconic musical moment.
Absolutely.
It all comes... It's a moment that represents everything coming together perfectly.
Right.
To me. And it's very cinematic.
Well, it's very well shot. And actually, the way they shot it cuts well together, too.
It's laid out very well, yeah.
And it... Okay, I know this is an old man argument. I try not to make them, but I like the fact that in that day, they used to shoot these things that, I mean, you'd have a full take, so you can watch it as opposed to shooting it, so you'd cut it up and make the performance and editing.
Coming up right here.
Yeah.
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
they always show the scene whenever they show Singin' in the Rain.
I just got... A rush, man. Right. It's beautiful.
I mean, you get to watch the whole thing, which is great.
Orchestration is just kicked, and he just kicked it at that moment.
And it's very dramatic to have the camera pull back while he's spinning. And Mount Hollywood Art School.
Hmm. This is what he's, out of everything, this is what Gene Kelly's known for.
Well, yeah.
This number right here.
Yeah.
This is the one that made it into the lexicon.
Yeah.
But he was big. I mean, he had a career already, but this really made his career.
What I'm saying is, it's like when someone wins an Oscar and they die, they say, Oscar winning so-and-so. I mean, that's what the first thing they say. The first thing that's associated with Gene Kelly really is this number out of his entire body of work.
Absolutely.
This is the one that rose to the top of everything. Yeah.
So the cop is annoyed that he's dancing and singing in the rain?
I guess.
Because the cop is no fun.
He's no fun. He's not
letting Mr. Killjoy.
He's the man.
He's the man.
You cannot sing or dance in the rain in the street.
He is the story vehicle to end the number.
That's right.
He's like the Monty Python guy who's always like, oh, nope, nope, no singing. Nope, right. Nope, nope.
None of that. None of that.
It's a beautiful number. And what was it? Who were they talking to? Vincente Minnelli or something? Or someone with the studio? And they're like, what are you going to do for this number? Singing in the Rain to Gene Kelly. How are you going to possibly do this number? He said, well, I'll tell you. I'll be singing, and it'll be raining. So everything else, we'll just fill it in. Don't you worry about it. That's basically what he said.
That's awesome.
The Dooley Mamby.
Mamby?
What was Mammy?
Oh, Mammy.
Yeah, you know.
So bad.
One of those old terms.
Well, obviously, because he was making fun of the jazz singer, and right. Al Jolson mm-hmm. sings Mammy.
Right.
Dueling Mammy.
That's the joke. Mammy.
Oh, yeah, we're coming up on a huge sequence. This is the big musical number.
And, of course, as they're talking about how their movie within this movie needs a big modern musical number, they, of course, insert a big modern musical number into their
awesome.
Movie.
Awesome.
So meta.
Yes. Brilliant.
Yeah, Gene Kelly loved to do the, like, ballet sequence, the musical sequence in a film where you just have this 12-minute, 10-minute sequence in a movie that's all music, all dancing, that tells a story in itself.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
On the Town, he did it with the ballet, the New York Ballet there.
Oh, that's right.
American in Paris, they did the, 15-minute ballet number. He was deeply affected by The Red Shoes, the film out of Britain that had their ballet number. So he loved to exercise that in his movies as well. And in this one, we have our big musical number, production number, that represents The Royal Rascal, the movie that they're going to do. Now, this is not Debbie Reynolds singing.
Oh.
She's seriously? Dubbed.
That is not her voice.
Hmm. Do you know who dubbed her voice?
No. You can hear it. That's not her voice.
Yeah, it is very deep and
mm-hmm.
and resonant. <It's> Whereas just when she sings Good Morning, it's like, good morning.
It's Debbie Reynolds' voice. But this, you can tell, it's not her. And it's just on this one number. They didn't like it in this slow ballad, the way her voice sounded, for whatever reason.
So now here they're.
She was known as a singer. She's a very good singer.
That's fair. Debbie well, Reynolds. Not everybody can sing every style, though.
But she
this
can.
This is kind she's of a different style.
For whatever reason, that time, that stage in her career, it just didn't go over. Huh. She's perfectly capable of singing this ballad.
I mean, could it be something as simple as somebody had a relative that sang this kind and they wanted to put him on for one track?
I think they just wanted something with even melodious tone, something that was so good that that's the reason why Lita needs to sound that good. That's why right. Kathy Sheldon, what's her name, has to have that type of a voice.
Right.
Because it's so perfect.
Mm.
And it's so fluid and smooth to make Lena look incredibly great.
And that was
right. that was a great transition.
That was an awesome
right
transition,
there.
Especially yeah. for 1952.
Oh, yeah.
Nice
yeah.
touch.
Incredible.
Well, and again, you know, Debbie Reynolds, as you can hear with Good Morning, her voice was much lighter and brighter mm-hmm. and younger sounding.
Yes.
Whereas this sounds like a mature, older
yes.
woman.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Good point.
Swell.
The cat's pajamas.
Swell.
It's the bee's knees.
That's super.
Here it is. Here's our number. This is it. The showpiece number of the movie.
And, you know, Sid Charisse is the woman in this number. And you have to wonder if maybe Gene Kelly wanted Sid Charisse for
Well,
the
Sid Charisse
was
pretty
part.
Tall. Sid Charisse towered over Gene Kelly, and the big thing they did together was Brigadoon, which
right.
was later in their career.
Right.
But
oh
at
my
this stage
God, that's
of the career,
right.
who knew? But this is, talk about boom shots, guys. Look at this boom shot. This is probably the best boom shot in musical history.
Yeah.
Any musicals. This is great. Look at this. They go up and they come back down again after all the lights come up.
Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps going and going and going.
Wow.
Look at this. You're still going. You're yeah. tracking, tracking.
And then?
Now we stop. And now we have our light cues.
Yeah, it's really well
done. And then
you
have all your extras. You have everyone under the boom. The camera comes down. They come out under the camera in front of it.
So yeah, it's awesome. Very dramatic.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
very.
Right in on that.
It's so full of life.
That's
to do something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here we got a lot
that,
of Technicolor
that,
in
that shot transition too. By the way, it was kind of a sweeping cut.
Yeah,
I like the conveyor belts.
Yep, nice touch. And this is the most Technicolor you're going to see on screen. Look at these colors.
You know, what I find, well, you know, I mean, in terms of being meta, the interesting thing is this was done obviously in 52 and, you know, Technicolor had been around for just a little bit, but, you know, was really, color films are really starting to pick up a lot. And it's supposed to be in the 20s when, of course, when there's no color.
Right.
So, but it's sort of like, well,
so
we'll,
it is
we'll
a
forget.
Little bit ironic.
We'll forget that.
If I use that word correctly.
We'll let you see it in color. But the audiences in the movie don't.
Right.
You know, it's funny also, actually, what this does, in a way, this tells show business story.
Yeah.
On a personal level. I mean, here he's...
And the last time,
you know, this is how someone goes about getting into the business, and it shows the whole
right.
Evolution
and the last
of it, yeah.
time that he dances, he does an even more impressive dance number than he did for the first two agents, and that makes sense.
Mm. Right,
you have to be really amazing.
I like this number because it's cyclical. It starts out he's the one fresh off the farm, right off the bus, and at the end of the number he sees the next guy coming off the bus.
Right.
Doing what
oh
he just
yeah,
did
yeah.
At the end of the
which
sequence.
Is also part of the Hollywood story. You know, the story. Yeah. The showbiz story. I don't want to say the Hollywood story. But yeah.
Colors.
I know.
Gosh.
That three-strip process is awesome, what they did.
I love this choreography. Hey. Swing your arms.
Oh, the hat. Holding up the hat and shaking it. That's
then
very
right
classic.
Into camera. Mm. This is a great number. The 5.1 remix on this, even for standard def, it's beautiful what they did with the sound on this film for the DVD.
And that move he did right there, I'm sorry, that was really an incredible move where he spun on one foot and it kept his balance completely and looked so easy.
Oh, wow.
It looked so easy as he was doing that, and that is really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't really think about the level of athleticism you have to do stuff like this unless you've actually tried to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the
Absolutely.
Performer's job is to make it look easy.
Exactly.
It's an illusion.
Because then it becomes an entertainment. It
Absolutely.
Doesn't look like they're struggling to do something. Now you're just
they're
looking
not
at
working,
how pretty it looks.
You know?
Yeah.
Just make it look like they're not working. And that's the key to success.
Oh, absolutely.
For the performer.
Because you don't want the audience to be tense and hope that, you know,
is he
going to
make it?
Is
he
going to
make
it?
Yeah.
Right, right.
Oh,
exactly.
I hope he does okay.
You sit
just
back
want to...
and you're the one that gets to be in pleasure while the guy's knocking himself out in pain for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm in heaven because of all the movement. I mean, all this movement in the sequence, the camera is just going and going all over the place. Track, 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 boom, boom, up, down.
Oh, and this shot is fabulous. So great.
Reveal to Sid Charisse's leg.
Sid Charisse's leg.
It's a great guest.
I like that wrinkle in the hose.
It.
That's a great touch.
It inspired Mike Nichols.
Oh, that's cool.
Graduate shot,
whole like nose smoke thing.
Yeah, she's a...
This is Sid Charisse, man, the world's longest legs.
And then, of course, I like the fact that they have this sort of actor character getting mixed up in the mob a little bit because the mafia was very prevalent back then in New York.
He's out of his
league.
All
the entertainers had something to do with them.
Right.
Whether they wanted to or not.
Right.
He's now,
they were there.
His character's now getting out of his league, and he's, you know, not city enough to know what's going on around him. And she's going to break him. She's going to...
And the glasses go back on.
Now, you know, Sid Charisse was married to Toni Martin, a singer, and Toni said, "I always knew who Sid was dancing with. She'd come home after dancing with Fred Astaire. She was fine and everything. When she was covered in bruises, I knew she was dancing with Gene Kelly."
Oh,
really?
Because Gene Kelly was very physical and very just threw around. And I mean, I don't mean to say, but the way he handled her and the type of dancing, it was very much more physical. Fred Astaire was... fluid, elegant, streamlined.
And it makes sense because Fred Astaire...
Low impact.
Fred Astaire always looked like he was floating on the air when he danced, whereas Gene Kelly definitely had a more solid grounding.
Right.
And Gene Kelly always billed himself as a dancer of the people. He was not elite. He was not affluent. He was not the tux and tails. He was the dancer of the people. type
interesting.
Of
interesting.
Yeah.
Like never a baseball player who danced. He was like an athletic man who danced.
Like,
yeah,
right
he was
there.
Very masculine in the way he danced.
Right. Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
Look at that shot. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh.
I really like the art direction.
The set and the curve right there incredible. At the end and the colors.
Well, the curves, yeah. The colors, the whole yeah. thing, how it's painted.
And then another boom right there. Oh, keep on it, man. Keep
and
doing
also,
it. I love it.
The way that their costumes Sorry. Contrast with the surroundings, too.
Right.
Well, I mean, getting back to what I was saying before, this is, you know, the way they're shooting their coverage, so to speak, to show that the dancing is, you know, they use the camera movements to really emphasize it without having to, depending on the cutting.
And this, this is mm-hmm. how you it's shoot like
a
dance.
It's like a nice balance is what the whole thing is. And
yeah. I mean, but that's the best way to shoot a dance scene is to have it the camera be further back so that you can see everything that's going on at once.
Or, frankly, an action scene.
I agree.
As far as I'm concerned. I mean, at least to a certain extent.
I mean, there are certain movies, maybe I won't name the directors, but who like to do the shaky cam thing where you have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
While the yeah. action is going on, you don't know who's who. It's just quick cuts and shaky mm-hmm. cam.
It's another overdone technique that can be used to great effect.
Right.
Right.
But misused, not so much.
Is misused by certain directors.
side note, do you guys know what the coin flipping thing was about? I get it as a little character tick for the one guy, but then the other two guys did it.
I think it's just to signify that they're mafia, basically. I think that's
connection.
What it
and,
is.
And actually, George Raft, who was a famous heavy in movies,
oh, that's
he was
what
known
it was.
For the coin flip to oh. represent the mob.
Oh,
so it's a
maybe
very,
that's why.
It's,
okay.
it's,
I was wondering
together.
What the etymology
it's
was.
More,
that.
It's
a
more
trope.
Of a, yeah, it's more of a film trope is what it is. Yeah.
Got it.
And I love this sequence from burlesque to vaudeville. Hey, hey, hey,
right?
They're in vaudeville. And then when they get to the Follies, it's very
classy. Very classy. But the same choreography, though, basically.
mm-hmm. And rather than doing the kicks at the end, he just like pulls his cufflinks.
And he's and
look at these soft kicks.
He's smoking. Yeah. And he's not dancing very much. You know, this reminds me of the Bugs Bunny story. Remember
which one?
Remember there was the one Bugs Bunny episode where he tells about his history of how he came up through the whole business.
Really?
Oh yeah, when he's
well,
doing like different
was,
musicals.
Was that was that made before or after this? I wonder if it was.
Yeah, that's
no,
a good
that
point.
Was it was after.
Ah.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's the toast of the town.
Classic Bugs Bunny short. Oh, yeah.
Oh, and is that Rita Moreno again?
Yeah, what happened to her? Where'd she go?
She was on the cutting room floor, actually. Her part was heavily edited from this movie.
Well, there's Sid Charisse again.
Now, look at this dissolve coming up. They show the set with the people, and the people go away, and it goes into infinity with the art direction. The way they had this set done. It's just yeah. beautiful. Get ready.
Oh, this whole sequence with her her sort of
this
cape
shot.
Flowing in the wind.
Look at this dissolve.
Uh-huh.
And now we go to his image of her.
Nice.
Yeah.
And look at the infinity line. Going
oh, yeah.
Her. Oh, nice. Well, yeah.
Very, very skillful.
Forced perspective.
That's well shot.
That's well painted.
Because to get that to look right, you
Well, that's a combination of shooting and art, and
sure.
the art direction.
Yeah.
And the wind machine with her.
Oh, that was
yeah.
very skillfully done.
She
wow.
said
look at that.
All her interviews. Oh, said wow. Charisse said we would go for time and time and time again to time the cape with the music.
Yeah.
For when it has to, I'll show you the shot where it goes
when
from
it goes
the ground,
back from
up,
one
up,
way
up,
to
up.
The other. Yeah.
That's and interesting. She's doing like a ballet kind of move.
She's,
she is this whole.
She was primarily a ballet dancer.
Yeah, interesting.
She's trained in ballet.
Which is really, and I think Gene Kelly was too. And I mean, the best dancers, you have to have some sort of grounding in ballet to really understand how to posture,
oh,
basically.
Okay.
How to have the
that.
Right posture. Because see how.
Here it is.
How they carry themselves.
Right here.
Oh, yeah.
Right with the music.
Wow.
See?
How'd they even get the wind machine in
that?
That
a matter.
There's wind machines hidden all over there.
I wonder if that was her real hair, because obviously she's wearing a wig when she's,
mm-hmm.
you know.
The short haircut, mm-hmm. the 20s yeah. haircut.
Right.
This is great as it wraps around. I like that with the material.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's
very artistic.
He is mm-hmm. strong.
Yeah,
man.
Strong.
She's a tall woman.
She's a tall woman. I'm not saying she was heavy or anything like that, but he is strong for that. Wow, look at that.
And you notice she's in flats there. She doesn't have heels.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, compared to him.
Well, she would have had to be able to do any ballet-looking stuff. She couldn't have had heels on for that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
True. Right. But he liked her not to be in heels, let's say that.
Right. I got the height thing.
And, wow, that was really well done with her
and
back in the same position.
Positions.
Mm-hmm.
The perfect positions.
You know, I want to see this film.
I think the Twine
Toss. This one they're making here?
The Twine Toss? Coin Toss.
Okay.
Represents corruption, I think, actually.
Yeah.
Because she's seduced by it and the corruption there. And that's sort of a visual symbolism.
But I think you're right about the George Raft thing, because that was something, you know, we knew, and so that you could associate with that.
Now he's much wiser. He's not idealistic like he was at the beginning.
He's grizzled.
You know the interesting thing? There hasn't been
grizzled.
No, but in this whole musical number, there hasn't been any dialogue.
Which is what I'm saying.
Except for the gotta dance.
Gene Kelly always had the sequence of just music and visuals
right.
in his films. He loved the ballet-esque type segments.
Nice. That's
Isn't that a great shot.
Yeah. That's a great shot.
Look at that Technicolor.
So in other words, it was an accepted way of...
Here's the new guy. Taking his place.
Oh, basically telling a story, a movie.
Yeah.
In other words, it's not like it was wholly new to audiences when they saw something like this.
Yeah.
It wasn't completely new, but it was Gene Kelly's favorite thing of the marriage between film and dance.
Right.
And he'd always try to do as much as he could within a film.
Which is great. Yeah, which is great. I mean, that's just
how musicals should be done. It should be a continuation of the story, not just all of a sudden, let's stop the story and have a song and
exactly.
dance.
Exactly. It's kind of part of what I was saying earlier.
But I think American in Paris is probably the one that takes the cake for that type of the sequence.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that built on everything else before and said, now we're going to just top everything. Look at this. That's a great shot.
And look at this shot. This is a blue screen.
Oh, right here. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, right.
And then they push in on him. It's a really cool effect. And now they push in on him.
Nice.
His big fat close-up.
His face 60 feet high.
And almost like he has horns in the back there, too.
That's going to look like that.
Actually, his ex-wife, Betsy Drake, would agree with you.
Because awesome.
They got to, no, seriously, not to be gossipy, but in her interview, I heard this from her mouth on an interview. She said, I was divorced, trying to get him out of my life, trying to start my own life. I did go see Sing in the Rain. And in that shot, she said, I can't get away from him. I can't get away. He's like coming right at her. And she says, you know, this
Gene
Kelly guy. So it was a funny interview with her.
So you, and now we have the ADR. Here we go.
Is that not Debbie Reynolds speaking?
That's not Debbie Reynolds. That's the same woman that did the singing.
Oh, no kidding. Why'd they do this part?
Well, just to match also the singing.
Yeah.
They wanted that melodious, beautiful, deeper voice, I guess.
Right.
You know, sound to do all the things that...
That was a pretty, that was a pretty lame kiss they just did right there. That's sort of like, I'm going to wipe my lips on you, and I'm not
going to kiss you.
And I'm not
going to
kiss you. Oh, kiss her, you fool.
Kiss her, you fool.
There's Rita Moreno.
Oh, yeah.
Zelda. Rita Moreno's character's name is Zelda. Yeah.
And that's it.
That's the only line she
had, I think. See you, Rita.
All right. Later.
We'll see you in later movies.
Before you were born.
I hate to say it, but she kind of looks like Jack Lemmon.
A little Some Like It Hot.
I hate to say it, but it's just like,
it's
what?
It's because the dress is so baggy.
The dress is baggy in that
that's
sense. And the way the hat is down, that's the way Jack Lemmon wore his hat in Some Like It Hot.
Well, and they probably took that from this movie, you know? I mean, because Some Like It Hot was after this
You're talking about Gene Hagen, not Debbie Reynolds.
Right? Yeah, Gene Hagen.
I'm joking. I know. Okay.
Myself.
Hmm. Look at Donald O'Connor. Great.
Yeah. Ouch.
Put together.
Right into the lens.
And of course, that kind of practice still continues today with publicists planting quotes from quote sources
Others. That never happens. What are you talking about? And you should believe everything you read in the press about what someone says. Absolutely. Those stories are all true.
Especially if so it's gossip true. About movie stars.
Yeah. You know what I found to be an even more reliable source is the internet.
Yes.
Pretty much anything you read on the internet is like
everything.
Dead on.
That's what
dead
I heard.
On.
Yeah.
I like, how that package, or is that her purse? It matches her dress.
I like how she's all in pink.
Yeah. Well, that's back when, I mean, those the type of people who can afford to have a different purse and shoes and hat for every single outfit.
Of course. This is where Lena gets her most lasciviousness.
Her diabolical plan.
Oh, is she serving him with papers?
No, yeah, it's her contract.
Her contract.
That's her contract.
Yeah. Right here.
That's me.
See, she's not dumb enough so that she can't understand legal
get what
language.
She wants. She's smart enough to get what she wants, but it's just how she goes about it that's in question. Star in the firmament.
Firmament.
She can't even pronounce it right.
You go, Lena.
Wow.
All singing, all talking, all dancing. Does this kind of contradict itself if it's all singing?
It's definitely redundant. Right, exactly.
So that's the.
You're right.
So now this is
it's all talking, it's all singing, things. All dancing so at the same time.
So this is her new voice.
Correct.
300% entertainment.
And that new voice is not Debbie Reynolds'
it's
voice.
It's not Debbie Reynolds' voice, right?
Oh, man, my world is shattered with that new.
There's so many metas in this. I think my head's going to explode.
Yeah, Charlie Kaufman has got nothing on this movie.
That's where Charlie Kaufman got it from.
So think about Debbie Reynolds. No, not just the dancing hardship she had with Gene Kelly. The studio says, "Oh, we don't want your voice for when you're supposed to be doing the voice. the very identity of your character in this story. We don't want."
Got
to
wonder at what point she found that out. So you know, like what opening
maybe,
day?
Yeah, maybe it was only in after it was being screened.
Right. But look, it's interesting. I mean, the moral of this movie is saying that you can if you can chip in for the greater good, but you're not going to. We guess we have to see it end because I honestly don't remember how it ends.
Well, I mean, but, it's about how real talent wins out. The character is a triple threat, and that's why she wins out over Lena Lamont.
Okay, so she does win out. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But and then of course in real life her voice wasn't good enough. She right. still got the part.
Hilarious.
I'm sorry, I just have to point out how fabulous Lena's dress is. It's like all right. diamonds or something, or crystals. It's great.
The showdown.
Yeah.
We got to knock her down a few pegs.
Well, how are they going to do that? I wonder.
This is where she really shows her claws. She's Dragon Lady now.
See, I hate this character right now. I'm confused. Yeah. No one in that position of authority would be confused for a second.
No.
That's why I call bullshit.
As soon as she said Sue, he'd have been on the phone with the lawyers.
I'm confused. I'm the head of the studio. Right. I don't know what I'm doing. No. I don't think so.
I don't think so.
So that's where kind of the script falls apart a little for me right here. I'm just not buying the character.
That's contrived. But
That is the one contrived. I mean, so far it's been okay.
But for a musical, you know, it's holding together pretty well.
So you see, they get her with the speech.
Right. That's exactly what I would have done to get her. It's like, let her talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go for
Easy.
It.
Easy.
Which is nice that the truth will set you free.
That's right.
I love how they do when they do the big nod in movies, like, okay.
You get it? Yeah. All they have to do is.
The Dawson.
Cavalier.
Hang on. I just want to hear this.
It ain't been in vain.
For nothing.
See that
random extra.
That's
right?
You
got the talk. Well,
ain't that sick? Oh no! He
went home that night. He's like, I got a line.
Oh no! He got cast. What are you talking about?
No, I know.
None of this. Pick out an extra to do that line.
Oh come on! That's a fun story to talk about. Even if it's not true.
Hey, my story is a fun story to talk about.
Of course it is.
My favorite bit of choreography is coming up.
With the curtain reveal?
The arms. Lena's arms.
Oh, the arms.
I love the arms.
Pumping the arms.
Yeah. Anyone who does Sing in the Rain, you can just do that arm movement.
Oh,
everyone knows exactly what you're doing.
Seeing that RF is being... Okay, now I get it. RF is being very clever. He says, okay, fine, let's up this. And now he's thinking.
And they're just going to watch the show.
Ooh.
The title tune.
She doesn't even know the title. How's she going to lip sync?
E flat.
Look at the arms.
Oh, the arms.
Donald Connie's got it. They all got it.
But
the
it's great.
Really happy face.
But it's perfect for what she's doing.
Now, that's Debbie Reynolds' real voice.
That is.
Yeah.
It's definitely Debbie Reynolds' voice. Oh, nice mix. And they're all happy. They've forgotten that she actually sounds like crap. And now, of course, you got the nod. That's not the nod.
Gene Kelly's funny. Now they're going to go to the rope.
Yes. There's our ref. That's right.
Awesome.
Time to pull the rope.
That's right.
Reveal the man behind the curtain. Or the woman. I love Jean Hagen,
no
the expression on her face,
right?
Like how she's overdoing it. And that was the nail in the coffin.
Stop that girl.
Oh.
See? Don Lockwood did the right thing.
That's called Hardball, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I like those. Those aren't glycerin tears, are they?
They look like wax.
No, I know. They were frozen on her face. I'm sorry.
They might be glycerin.
Very pretty glycerin.
Well, it's easy to say. It's definite they were not real tears.
Miss Reynolds, I'm sorry.
She's starting out.
Well, you do a lot of takes, and, you know, your eyes get red when you really cry.
Yeah.
That's very true. So they don't want you to really cry.
Yeah. This was still back in the day when acting wasn't completely realistic. And they wanted everyone to look great all the time.
Well, MGM, MGM was all about the glamour.
Yeah. You know, MGM is still about the glamour.
Oh, really?
In their debt riddled existence.
MGM will rise again.
Some of the most glamorous people are the most in debt. I mean, that's probably like, why they are in debt.
Costs money to be glamorous.
Exactly.
There you go. It takes a lot of money.
Like MC Hammer? What?
Is that glamorous, really? Is that the right word? I'm just checking.
It was for a while.
I was going to go with Funky Fresh,
glamorous
is okay.
Oh, no, you can totally see his makeup.
He's wearing a lot of things.
I mean, you can definitely see all the makeup. I would notice that before.
Yeah, the blue.
Well, that's the high definition.
So now this is real meta. So the film in the film that they made is called Singin' in the Rain.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ultimate meta.
Ultimeta.
Hey, you just made up a word.
There
Fade
we go.
Out.
Yay!
The end. Made in Hollywood, USA. Here we go. Cool.
What a swell picture.
And there
that
were
was swell. It was the bee's knees.
Super even.
And notice, everyone, no credits at the end. That was it. That's the way it used to be.
That's the way they rolled without rolling credits.
It was always credits at the beginning, and then at the end, that was it.
All the little guys, they didn't get their due.
No.
The little guys like...
What film started all that?
I don't know.
Star Wars?
You are correct. Mm-hmm. Star Wars started the whole thing of giving everyone, you know, I mean, essentially crediting everyone at the end. Because before, you basically had most of the credits at the beginning, then maybe some at the end, and that was it. If I recall correctly, please, someone correct
me. I'm sure I never noticed. Heard that. Yeah.
So I can't call you on it.
No. Okay. No. All right.
Okay. Great. It's truth forever and ever. Amen.
That's right. Okay. There you go. So do we like this?
Yes.
Does it stand the test of time?
I can't stand it.
For sure.
Would we call this a classic?
Yes.
Yay.
Are you kidding? Yeah.
Would we call this one of the best movies ever made?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, as far as pure entertainment, which is what movies were originally intended to be, is just pure entertainment.
And if you're saying best movies ever made, that encompasses all genres and all types. So, yeah, I'd say this is one of the best movies ever made because, like Tim just pointed out, in its genre, it's pretty much second to none. And so in the world of film overall, then one of the best. I mean, like, very interesting, like all the meta stuff was outstanding. And then just the art of the film altogether.
Mm-hmm.
It's a masterpiece.
It won't go out of date because it has its tongue in cheek for poking fun at the nostalgia within the film of when it was made for the 20s and everything. And so, you know, a period of its time. So it's going to be ageless.
Oh, yeah.
Because of its, it's one of those musicals that just won't date.
Because it was already, in its time, it was a period piece.
Right.
Which helped to make it last forever, which is interesting. And it's very cheerful, uplifting, nice,
great
the word MGM, probably the best MGM movie musical ever made. So if you ever need to have your spirits lifted and it's playing down at a movie theater somewhere, wherever you live in the world, you could always go see Singin' in the Rain. You'll be very happy when you leave.
There you go.
Absolutely.
You'll leave tapping your foot. Either that or
singing those songs.
Either that or what's the other one? What was the movie where they had? What was that entertainment in? You know the movie I'm talking about.
That's Entertainment was a compilation of MGM.
No. There was That's Entertainment, but there was the movie that's Entertainment was in. That's the same kind of movie.
Oh, the
song?
That's Entertainment?
Yeah, the song was in another movie, an MGM
musical.
Wasn't
that Bandwagon?
Bandwagon, yeah. Bandwagon is kind of a tiny bit like this.
Am I stretching the thesis. Am I correct? Is that Bandwagon?
Yeah, it is Bandwagon. Okay, you're correct.
Sure. Haven't seen it, can't comment.
Yeah, that's where like it was not quite like this, but it was like lots of songs in it.
But this movie is just the perfect marriage of everything that the other movie musicals were doing, but trying to have, you know, the singing, the dancing, and the story. This movie just gets the perfect balance It's just there. You couldn't, you know, it shouldn't be like, there should have been more dancing. There should have been more singing and more story. No, they just perfectly blended it together. And I think that's why it's considered the greatest of all time.
With a wonderfully inventive storyline.
Yeah.
The storyline really is what does it.
A good, strong storyline and a good, strong background and understanding of how to tell that storyline, which is good.
Yep. What it's about, it has a real good core. And then everything else can revolve around that. Because it has a solid core.
Absolutely.
So they, you know, to the balancing of music to dialogue to around that great core idea, all integrated beautifully.
Yep.
Absolutely.
No weaknesses.
It's just like we were saying earlier. It's like no movie is good without a decent story core.
Absolutely.
You know, you can have all the eye candy, all the great singing and dance numbers that you want or whatever you put in your film, but without that story, which is driven by the characters, you can't. There's nothing there.
And that's Comden and Green. I mean, they really come up with the transition from silence to talkies and to make that a basis for a musical. I mean,
that's
what a
great
idea. And, of course, this, I remember they redid this, and it came out as a Broadway musical at one time. Singin' the Rain was back on Broadway, and they made it into a musical.
Did it work?
I think it was around for a while. I don't think it was.
Oh, I know colleges and universities, the theater programs will put this on. Singing in the Rain.
I feel like I hear all the time that somebody's doing a Singin' in the Rain production somewhere.
Imagine that, but I hadn't heard that. Wow, okay.
It's a film. It's the film medium being adapted to the stage. It was never a play. You know, so it's really cool that they do that.
Right.
Well, I mean, if they can make Spider-Man into a musical, which they are on Broadway, by the way, it's...
If they can make the movie big into a musical, which they did.
If they can make the movie Carrie into a musical.
They did?
Yes, twice. Not once, but twice. The first time flopped horribly. The second time.
I hope so.
I think they're still working on it. They're working on the second one.
I think they're trying to get the second one together right now.
Right. The first one was just such a... I think you had told me about it. It was just such, a wreck. You told me all about this.
Carrie the musical is infamous. Yeah. It had three performances, I think, or something.
Oh, yeah. But they've done stuff like Mary Poppins and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, which I'm assuming translated
Mary Poppins,
okay.
I actually saw, and they definitely expanded it, and they actually adhered closer to the original stories. It doesn't really follow the same plot as the movie, which is why it's able to survive on... Because Mary Poppins was originally a series of stories.
Right.
So that's how it's sort of able to work. I definitely feel like the movie was superior, especially considering you had Julie Andrews.
Right.
And Dick Van Dyke.
Right. Yeah.
Hard to beat.
And penguins.
But the musical, it worked, you know. And I think the best part of that musical is they had Bert tap dancing on the ceiling at one point. And that's literally tap dancing on the ceiling. He had a rig and he climbed up the proscenium, went up to the ceiling and started tap dancing.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of sure you'd have to do something like that.
Yeah. And they do. And, you know, you can do that sort of thing in film, you know, but to do that on a stage show is pretty.
That's pretty
special.
Yeah, impressive.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, we'll keep on talking about this offline. I have so many questions about Mary Poppins.
I'll just wrap it up on my end to say that Gene Kelly is my favorite film music performer.
Yeah.
I've always loved his body of work and his style, and a visionary as far as what he did with cinema and his ideas and how he translated his talents to film and his visions of what he saw, how film musicals could be so much better. And he really made that happen in a lot of great ways.
It's true.
And I just admire his career greatly. And he's always been someone that I just love his career.
Yep. Even up to Xanadu?
I never saw Xanadu, so maybe if I did, I wouldn't be saying what I said just now. But
you may want to skip it, but you may want to experience it at least once.
I think you may want to experience it once. So the roller skating scenes where he's roller skating and has them, okay, there's some little, you know, magic to it. But overall, it was just, you know, the musicals weren't working anymore, and it was trying, you know, an attempt to revive musicals, and it was like, yeah.
On acid.
Not going to happen. on acid, on, you know, disco roller rink with ELO music, which was good, but hard times. But, but I think he definitely had a great run during this, so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to say goodbye to our audience. This has been Serge Dalpierre and...
Tim McMillan.
And
Laura Thompson.
And
Duncan K. Fraser.
And this has been Film Grok. See ya.